And so I want to look in Luke. I want to start in Luke 19, 1 through 10 tonight, and we're going to go to a few other passages. Then Jesus entered and passed through Jericho. Now behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, who was chief tax collector, and he was rich. And he sought to see who Jesus was, but could not because of the crowd, for he was of short stature. So he ran ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going to pass that way. And when Jesus came to that place, he looked up and saw him and said to him, "Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house." So he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. But when they saw it, they all complained, saying, "He has gone to be a guest with a man who is a sinner." Then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor. And if I've taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because he is also a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and save that which was lost." And so in our New Testament, we see a number of people in their interaction with Jesus. And that's instruction to us, because there are different types of people, and the ministry of Jesus was tailored to the type of people they were. Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector, and by his occupation, he became rich. Roman taxes were collected by publicans and then remitted to Rome. There was purchase tax on all that was bought and sold. There was bridge money to be paid when a bridge was crossed, you know, like the toll up at Grand Island. Road money to be paid when main roads were used. Harbor dues to be paid when a harbor was entered. Market money to be paid when a market was used. Town dues to be paid if you entered a walled town. If a man was traveling on a road, he might have to pay tax for using the road, tax on his cart, tax on the wheels, tax on the axle, and tax on the beast or beasts that were pulling the cart. There was a tax on crossing rivers, a tax on ship, a tax on use of harbor quays, a tax on dams, and there were certain licenses that had to be paid for engaging in certain trades. Sound like New York State to me. Anyway, by the number of taxes collected, you can see a fair number of people were needed to be on site and receive the tax money. So they might be sitting in the gate of the town when you came, and okay, you have to pay this, 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 and this, and they collected the taxes. Now, Rome gave a certain amount of latitude to the tax collectors in as much as what they collected, as long as Rome got a sufficient amount of money from the tax collectors. Whatever was left over, they kept. And so Romans were happy as long as there was no rebellion and there was a revenue stream. But publicans were considered as traitors, collaborators with Rome. They were outcast. They were prohibited from testifying in court, you know, the religious court. If they offered a charitable gift, it might be refused because of the source. Many of them were wealthy. They were considered unclean due to their interaction with Gentiles, and a pious Jew would not even touch a publican or brush against a publican. And to sit down and eat with one, totally out of the question. So now we see that Zacchaeus had made a choice. And there's many choices in our lives, but he had traded his nation, his heritage, and his fellowship with other Jews for an occupation in which he made a considerable amount of money. Essentially, he traded his birthright for this job. That does not mean he had no desire for spiritual things or the heritage of the Jewish nation, but the nation had disowned him. Jesus was coming. He wanted to see him. The crowd wouldn't make way for him. He was despised, so he climbed up in a tree. Jesus came and he stops at the tree, and imagine his surprise when he said, "Hurry up, come down, I got to stay at your house today." And the people grumbled that Jesus would have anything to do with a hated publican, or particularly to be a guest at his house. He was not accepted in their society. We know the rest of the story, for Zacchaeus was rejoicing to have Jesus there at his house. Half of all he had was given to the poor, and there was an offer to restore fourfold if he had defrauded anyone. And Jesus proclaimed that salvation had come to the house of Zacchaeus. Now, this is important because we have many a Zacchaeus out there today. And you wouldn't have to go far from this church to find them. To a degree, the whole American culture chases money. When they're not chasing money, they're chasing pleasure of some kind or another. And so people have traded spiritual things for money. And many a sharp practice is common today. Maybe dishonest, maybe just skating on the line. People call me every day on the phone, every day. They say, "Oh, your Social Security number's being used down in Texas." And the man said, "I'm an employee of the Social Security Administration." I said, "I very much doubt you are. What I think you are is a thief." The man hung up on me. When they call and talk about they're going to give you a rebate on your utilities, they want the number off your utility bill so they can get a commission for switching you to some other utility that you don't want. And the proof is the number that you trustingly gave them. Sharp practice everywhere. What can be done with people like this? Now, we might think that spiritually these people are a lost cause, but we don't see as God sees. We don't. They may well have a desire for spiritual things and a hunger for the things they walked away from while they're chasing the American dream. And it's our job to try to bring salvation to the homes of many who are like Zacchaeus, for the Lord is able to change the heart of any person, not us. We're not doing it. We must remember that it's the Lord that works to transform. Now, I want to look at Luke 10, starting at verse 38. Now it happened that as they went, they entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into their house, and she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she approached him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me." And Jesus answered and said to her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her." And so here's two women, and women were extraordinarily important, and they were prominent in the gospel history. They walked with Jesus, they fed him, they gave him support, they were there at the cross, they were helping to see at his burial. They were the first at the empty tomb. Mary and Martha are two of these women. And the two women are a contrast, and you often see this. Martha was a detail person. So she's running around preparing a meal and was distracted with her preparation. And so Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus, drinking in. She's listening to everything he says. Martha asked Jesus to tell Mary to help with the work. And the reply was that while Martha was worried and bothered about many things, Mary had chosen the good part, which was not to be taken away from her. Now, this doesn't mean that when there's some work to do, you could sit and read your Bible and say, oh, I'm choosing the good part. But there was an urgency of Jesus about his ministry and about his teaching, and you see it peeking out various places in the ministry. He knows that those people around him don't understand what's happening and going to happen. And we think of the fact his disciples didn't fast while he was with them. And he compared it to the bridegroom and his attendants. They're not going to fast while there's joy. And it's further defined by Luke 17:22, and this is important. He said to his disciples, the days shall come when you long to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and you will not see it. The time for him to teach and prepare those who would be left behind was limited. While the bridegroom was with them, there was no time to mourn. And so this time that Mary was sitting at his feet, who knows if she would ever have another chance in her lifetime to hear that much. So as Mary sat and learned all she could, it brings a statement from Paul in Philippians chapter 3. He said he suffered the loss of all things. He doesn't care. He wants to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his suffering. And so the concept to learn more and more is part of the Christian life. Anybody sitting here should be able to say, I know more today than I did 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 70 years ago, or whatever the case may be. Of course, we know at the time, being pious Jews and being around the Feast of Tabernacles, that they could have been outside in a leafy booth, and Martha might have been running in and running out like crazy trying to bring out food, and she's fussing over a meal. So it's not to say the Christian life consists of nothing but study. That's the issue that's calling for the third election in Israel today, because the party that holds the balance of power doesn't want to partner with the Haredi ultra-Orthodox, who want to be exempt from military service, work, and everything else, so that they need do nothing but study. But I digress. In the pages of the Bible, we meet Jesus and grow to understand more and more, but there's still actual work that needs to be done, and detailed people are very useful for that. We have some of those people here in this church that you can give them a job and you don't have to check on them once. They'll just chase it and get it done. Ministry takes work. It takes attention to detail. It takes planning. But it pays to remember that without salvation and the knowledge of the gospel, any amount of work really can't bear fruit. Now we're going to go to Luke 22:31-34. The Lord said, Simon, Simon, Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat, but I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. But he said to him, Lord, I'm ready to go with you both to prison and to death. He said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow this day before you will deny three times that you know me. There was certainly an amount of jostling, I'll call it jostling, among the disciples over which one of them would be the greatest. We know that Peter, James, and John were in the inner circle. They were taken with Jesus up on the Mount of Transfiguration. Peter was prominent, but in this passage, he assumes his faith is greater than it is. And it's pretty easy to think you can accomplish something And then to go out and actually do it is something different altogether. So I've dreamed many a dream in my mind, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then when I get out and get to doing it, difficulties arise and problems. And you begin to wonder if you didn't bite off more than you can chew. Peter faced the test of standing for something when there's a cost to doing it. He's told Satan wants to sift him like wheat. It was sifted in those days to move husk and foreign particles out after it had been winnowed from the straw. Peter would be tested that night, but Jesus prayed for him and was assured his faith would not fail and he would turn again to strengthen his brothers. For Peter, what can we say? All of us struggle. Never think you will not struggle. Struggles are a part of life. Remember that we do not struggle alone. We have a great high priest who intercedes for us that our faith not fail. Peter decided to go fishing after Jesus had risen, and Jesus met him on the shore. Nancy and I stood on that shore. There's a church built there. And you can look out over the Sea of Galilee there. And picture that small boat out fishing. Children, do you have any fish? Cast your net on the other side. Peter was asked a question there. Simon, do you love me more than these? When he said, you know I love you, he said, shepherd my sheep. Feed my lambs. Now, there's many more characters that we could sketch out from the scripture, but if I spoke to midnight, you'd probably be upset with me. But ask yourself, if you are now, or if you ever have been, one of these people. Zacchaeus was an outcast. People given up on him. He had a job and he had money, but he was rejected by the spiritual leaders. He was considered a traitor to the nation. He was not wanted for worship. He was not wanted for service. And many people have felt this way over the years and do so to this day. God is able to see not what you are today or what you have been in the past. He can see what you can become. What's the potential? What can be made out of you? Jesus said, I must stay at your house today. And he broke with custom. No other rabbi would have gone and eaten at that house because it was just not done. Do you sometimes feel as though people may have given up on you? If you are a Zacchaeus, and I wish I could say this to everyone in Olean and Allegheny, you're welcome here. In this place, you'll find a welcome. If you're not a Zacchaeus, it's your duty in Christ to welcome any and all who wish to come. There's no such thing as throwaway people. It's part of the common thought outside these doors that there are people we just throw away. Maybe they live under a bridge somewhere. You don't know. But we say, nothing can be done with them. We're not to be like the Pharisees who saw the publicans or sinners as beyond redemption. So whatever you've done or whatever you do, you can turn and you can live honestly. People have done it for many, many years. John the Baptist told the publicans to collect no more tax than they'd been ordered to collect. In other words, do it honest. He didn't tell them to quit the job, but he did tell them, do it honest. Be honest in your dealings. How about Mary and Martha? Which one of those might you be? We know there's a time to be busy. We know there's a time to be still. Both are important. Martha was so cumbered with serving to honor a distinguished guest, that's all she could think about. She wanted everything to be nice, and that desire so occupied her mind, it was all she could think about or see. Mary listened to the man who spoke like no other man ever spoke. She could not get enough. Now, it's possible to get lost in the details of ministry because we might have a vision of just how things should be done, or we might want to do them exactly as we did in the past. I'm very well acquainted with a pastor who was a terrible micromanager, and he had to do everything, and he had to oversee everything. And two old friends and myself were doing a project, and he had the church secretary call about every half hour to check what we were doing. And the other two fellows got very, very upset. What are we going to do? I said, guys, we're going to do this project just like we figured to do it. We're going to lay it out, and we're going to get it done. Never mind these phone calls. This pastor's not a construction guy. He don't know enough to come and help us, let alone direct us. So forget it. We're just going to do it. And that's what we did. How did the project go? It was a great success. But it could have been micromanaged right into the ground. And I saw a number of projects go that road. Get out of the idea that nobody but you can do something, whatever that thing might be. Get out of the idea that if it's not done a certain way, it'll never work, because there's probably 10,000 ways to do it. What you need to do in a church is to get some people that want to do some work and kind of have a loose rein on them and let them go. See what they can do. Because it's possible to become so fussy about just how things have to be done, other people might dread to work with us. Oh, don't put me with that one. If we get distracted with details and means of ministry, we might lose sight of where we're wanting to go and what we want to accomplish. Because if you can't lead anyone to Christ, if you can't edify anybody, if you can't build up the church, then you're not succeeding, no matter how many details you fuss with. The end of all ministry is Christ, and we can't forget the destination while we fret about the means. In our account, both women desired to do something for Jesus, but they went about it in very different ways. Martha wanted to honor Jesus with a very nice meal. She was distracted with preparations. Mary honored him by carefully listening to everything he said. Martha asked Jesus to require Mary to immerse herself also in the details of preparation. But Jesus replied, the way Mary chose to honor him was the good part, and it was not going to be taken away from her. Now, women in those days were not often considered even as eligible to study and learn things. Typically, they were not educated. But here she is listening, and Jesus said, you're not going to take that away from her. You're not taking it away. What about Peter? He had an important position. He thought he was able to do much more. He was severely tested that night, and he had some failure. All of us have had a certain amount of failure in our lives. Certainly, we're not proud of failure, but we can learn from it, and we can move on. Failure in the past does not define or control what we can do doing forward unless we let it, unless we concentrate on the failure of the past. When Peter took the disciples out fishing, perhaps he was thinking that his failure had disqualified him from ministry. Ah, but I know how to fish. I can do that. There on the shore of Galilee, here's a question. Do you love me more than these? So the failure of the past was not brought up. But the question was, what do you love the most? With the answer that Peter gave, the instruction was clear. There was a job for him to do, and that job was not fishing. In Romans 12:3, Paul states that each man should not think more highly of himself than he ought to, but to use sound judgment, as God has allotted to each person a measure of faith. Paul had struggles with those who thought they could teach but did not teach sound doctrine. He's written elsewhere of those who confidently teach things that they do not understand. Such teachers are around us today, and in fact, they'll come to your door. We all need sound judgment, but to this I must add the admonition that we not let failure or fear of failure prevent us from trying. If Peter teaches us anything in this portion, he teaches that failure is not the end of ministry. Peter went on to start the Church of Pentecost. He preached to many. He opened the doors of faith to the Gentiles. Vital ministries. I've heard a statement many times in my life. I could never do that. I can't. If you are firmly and totally convinced that you're not able to do something, you will probably not be able to do it. I have known people that were held captive by their own doubts and fears. They never reached their potential. What many people don't understand is the fear of failure and the belief they cannot do something is what stands in their way, far more than whatever skill or ability they might lack. Peter believed he could stand with Jesus at the arrest, but he couldn't do it. Rather than hold this future failure against him, Jesus was looking to the future. And he said, I want you to shepherd the church. I've got a job for you. I'm not going to bring up what you failed to do in the past. We know that Peter made a success of that job. So, what can we say? If you're a Zacchaeus, leave the past behind and follow Christ. If you are a Martha, do not lose sight of Christ and the details of the work. Stand ready to hear his words. If you are Mary, you've chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from you. If you are Peter, leadership is not now, nor was it ever, easy. Don't expect it to be easy. There will be problems. There will be difficulties. There will be people that don't agree with you. There will be struggles. There may be failure. Leaders in particular must try to use sound judgment, but always remember, God does not define us on the basis of past failure, because he can see always what we're able to become, and he stands ready to help us in the ministry where he sends us. We'll have our closing hymn now.